Good morning and welcome to the Ask the Pastor program here on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO. KFUO is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's the middle of your week. It's Wednesday. Thanks again to Pastor David Boies Claire. We went through the first 16 verses of chapter 5 of the book of Acts. That's Ananias and Sapphira. If you didn't get a chance to call in during that hour of the program, you can certainly do so now. Here's sort of the basic ground rules of what we do on Ask the Pastor. If it's in the news, if it's something you've been wondering about, if it's something that's been sort of concerning you since maybe you were way, way, way back in catechism class, if it's something where perhaps you're not Lutheran and you've always wondered why we believe, teach, and confess what we believe, teach, and confess, well, this is the program for you, where you can call with those questions or comments at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can also email in those questions from your good old-fashioned laptop, if anybody still uses those, your iPad. Download that app from the iTunes Store. It works really, really well. Joining us this morning, a brand new guest, new pastor for our program here, Pastor Paul Hennecke from Luther Memorial Lutheran Church in Tinton Falls, New Jersey. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I am well. What brings you to our program?
Well, I've been invited to come and participate and see what's going to happen. So,
well, that's a great reason.
Yeah.
See, we love pastors who, when you ask them to show up, they actually do.
Yeah, right.
And tell me a little bit about your ministry and your congregation. I'm obviously a friend of our good friend, the Reverend Dr. Tony Steinbrunn, president of your district, the New Jersey district.
Sure. Luther Memorial is a congregation of about 350 people. It's located in Monmouth County, New Jersey, which is close to the shore. It's about 50 miles from New York City.
Oh, yeah, we've heard about the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, and we're about 6 miles from the shore.
Do you wish they would have never put that program on?
Well, all those people are from somewhere else. None of them actually live in New Jersey. And it's been an exciting ministry here. I've been here 30 years. We have a small school. We have, the worship experience. We have pretty active. We're pretty connected in the community with a lot of mercy kinds of ministries that go on in this area. It's been an interesting experience in terms also of a connection with the military at Fort Monmouth. When Fort Monmouth was here, that was the location of the United States Army Chaplain School, and that pulled out, and now Fort Monmouth is completely closed. But Naval Weapons Station Earl is still open, and we're as a congregation working with the Jim Buckman House church planner kind of thing to put some ministry satellite things down there to help them out. So
there are a number of
different things going on.
Now I know we have Anthony Iovine, who's down there at New Milford, and then mm-hmm. you've got Tony Steinbrunn and yourself there in Tinton Falls. How's the population of LCMS Lutherans in New Jersey?
It's small. there's not a lot of us around. that's one of the challenges, I think. The history of Lutherans in New Jersey probably is more the history of Lutherans in New York. And as folks landed from Europe and settled in the great centers in New York City, in Bay Ridge, in Brooklyn, and places like that, as their lives changed, then they began to move into the suburbs. And it was mostly from those folks that most of our congregations were founded. So that, and especially in the 60s, like Luther Memorial was founded in 1960, basically it was people who were moving south from either across the river from New York or who were coming out of North Jersey looking for life in the suburbs and life in the country. That's what they were headed for.
Is your part of the state, would you call it a fairly religious, fairly Christian part of the state of New Jersey? Or is New Jersey suffering like the rest of the country with, sort of a decline of Protestants?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no question about that. There's a couple reasons for that. The Catholic Church, Roman Church, is still very strong in Monmouth County. I mean, I'm surrounded by, when you look at Luther Memorial, you look at a map, I mean, if you say, well, what are the churches around here? Within 4 or 5 miles of Luther Memorial, there are probably 6 Catholic churches with more than 5,000 families apiece.
Really?
So, yeah, really. Right. So there's a lot of Roman Catholics around.
Well, speaking of that, we have our first caller on the line. Let's go to the phones, Pastor Henneke, and talk with Gwen, who has noticed a story that I had my stack of stuff here down at the bottom, but I had it about, well, about what's going on with the Roman Catholic Church in Germany. Gwen, good morning.
Good morning. I think we need to pray for another Martin Luther in Germany with the Catholic Church. They had on PBS yesterday that in Germany, if you have any religious affiliation, you are taxed 9% of your income. The Catholic Church has come out, and the bishops have made a statement that if you do not pay your taxes to your religious taxes in the Catholic Church, you will be denied all sacraments.
Yeah, I did see.
Is that
I don't
fair?
Know if you, did you see that story, Pastor?
Yes, I did. I saw that. And I think the rest of that article spoke something about the idea that many folks were just, you know, were beginning to back away from that tax, which kind of prompted the bishops and others, I guess, to say if you don't participate in this, then, you know, we're going to use the law to
They're not excommunicating, they're only denying the sacrament.
Yeah, they're denying it, which is pretty severe.
Well, that's the minor ban, right?
Very. As opposed to the major ban, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think they're trying to get folks to do that. I think the problem, ultimately, with that kind of thing is that the church in Europe and Germany, particularly, has relied on state sponsorship for their stewardship. And that's kind of a problem. You know, this is.
Do they not have collections and worship then?
I don't think they do too much of that. I think that they're relying primarily on these taxes to fund their ministries.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting operation because as a pastor or a priest, I guess the technicality of law is you're really a civil servant. That's the way it works in Scandinavia as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, that's true, and so that makes you an employee, you know, rather than all that stuff kind of whittles away at the why of our life. You know, why are you a pastor? Why are you going to church? Why are you putting an offering in the plate? This idea of a response to God's mercy and grace.
Yeah, there are a lot of folks that are going into the church in Belgium in service as pastors because they've got a great retirement plan.
Well, yeah.
But they don't believe a thing. Honestly, Gwen, they don't believe a thing, but they're in the church because they like the benefits and they like the retirement plan.
Yeah. And then a lot of these...
I have to be very careful because I'm the widow of a Lutheran pastor and I am surviving because of the retirement plan. But that does not motivate anything else in my spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right. The idea, though, of you living on a retirement plan, within the next couple of years, I suspect I'm going to be getting my Concordia retirement plan as well. And, you know, the idea there is, you know, the workers are worthy of their hire. I mean, we,
right.
as an act of, you know, love and care for one another based deeply in the scriptures, Paul talks about that kind of stuff, we care for one another, and that's part of how we care for one another. So this is a response to God's mercy and grace in Jesus Christ, a response to God's gift of the church to the world. I mean, it's all response stuff, and we always get in trouble when we try to take that response stuff and try to make a law out of it and say, well, you have to do this, you have to do that, or else we're not going to do this or we're not going to do that. I mean, we run into the same thing sometimes in Lutheran churches. You know, if somebody comes with a need, we have that members-only kind of mentality that says sometimes, well, if you're not a member, we're not going to help you.
You haven't come to Carlisle, Illinois, then.
No comment.
Well, don't want dueling congregations here.
I think just on a very real sense, if you're serving in ministry in New Jersey, you have to be very sensitive to the idea when coming into it that most of the people you're going to meet and most of the people you're going to talk to are not members of anything. I mean, there are folks who may be searching, there's folks who may be having a need, there are folks who are looking to experience God's mercy and grace. And these are wonderful opportunities that God puts in our path to help and to serve people. At a time when they're when they're looking for something. And if our first question is, you know, what church do you belong to, or you know, then that's not going to necessarily be a good thing.
My daughter runs preschool and before and after care for the church, provided by the church.
Mm-hmm.
And right now she has 68 children that go through her hands every day.
Mm-hmm.
62% of them are not baptized.
Right. Mm. And so here's something that God places in front of us and says,
isn't it awesome?
It's how are you going to get, you know, how do you deal with those families? I think you deal with those families in terms of God's love, mercy, and grace in Jesus Christ.
Right.
And
I won't keep you. I just really was appalled by that.
I mean, it's
away from anyone.
Yeah.
On the basis of, I mean, that's worse than the indulgences.
Well, it is pretty harsh. I mean, don't say that lightly. I think that is pretty harsh, and it's probably going to build more resentment than people coughing up their taxes, you know.
Well, they're not paying them in the first place. Gwen, thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, they're not paying them. And, well, you know, right now the church in Europe is in such bad shape, regardless of Catholic or Orthodox or mm-hmm. Lutheran or mm-hmm. you know, any Protestant denomination that's there. It seems that the ones that are thriving are the independent ones, like Selk in Germany.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that rely on volunteerism, the voluntary donation, mm-hmm. as opposed to the state taxing for the purpose of the church.
Sure.
And that says something, too, about our theology, I think.
Sure, sure. And it's interesting, too, when you get folks who come from Europe who migrate to the United States, join a Lutheran church, and I've had some limited experience with this. They don't really, for a while there, it takes them a little while to get into the idea that this is something that they have to support this, or, you know, there's no check coming from Washington for us folks, you know.
Well, and for those out there who maybe want the state and the church to be a little bit closer in their association, Europe is a good warning.
Oh, absolutely. Because once you start getting all those lines blurred up, the church always loses on that.
Yeah.
On that side. I mean, we've struggled with, I mean, and not necessarily my parish, but many churches have struggled with whether or not they're going to, you know, partner with public school districts to provide preschool, or whether they're going to take certain government programs and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Oftentimes that does not have a happy ending in terms of if you're receiving some payment, then there's always strings that come with that.
Well, the one who pays the piper calls the tune.
Absolutely.
I think we've lost sight of that. That's true. We have an email for you, Pastor, from our friend Richard, a listener in, of all places, Hawaii, where he points out that it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Long-suffering in Hawaii at 5 a.m.
I bet the sun's up, though.
Yeah, Richard says, greetings from Hawaii. He was listening to the Bible study last hour. As I said, we were in chapter 5 of the book of Acts, the first half of that chapter. He says, is it sinful to enjoy a great trip instead of giving the money to the church? He says, I sometimes feel guilty about my travels with so many in need. Is this the same as Ananias and Sapphira?
That's an interesting question. Thinking off the top of my head. I mean, Ananias and Sapphira were being deceptive. I mean, they were looking at this and saying, I'm not going to do this. And they understood what they were being asked to do, and they were talking about that. And it was a dishonesty on their part. And so they suffer this judgment. I think his question more is the question of Christian freedom. You know, as God's free children in because of the cross and resurrection of Jesus, with our sins forgiven, the question for us is, well, how do we use what God has given us? And I don't think that you or me or anyone is in a position to tell Richard, you know, you shouldn't take the nice trip because. But at the same time, Richard, like everybody else, has to sit down, look at his life, look at what the Lord's calling him to do, pray about those kinds of things, and then make all his financial decisions, whether that's a trip or whether that's a new suit of clothes or whatever, based on his understanding of his role in the kingdom of God and what God's asking him to do and how he processes all of that kind of stuff in light of the cross and the resurrection. I think
we're not supposed to all live like hermits in the Syrian desert, are we?
No, not really. No, I don't think so. But yet every decision has to be thought through. I think that's what life under the cross is. It's you think about this stuff, you pray about this stuff, you don't make them casually in terms of anything casually in terms of, well, this is, I give so much to the church, therefore I deserve a trip, or any of those other kinds of things, which people sometimes, I think, reason that out. It's my money to begin with. I'll do what I want. As long as I pay my tax, it's more complicated than that. But I still think you get a trip because I travel a lot.
505-7850.
So I'm not trying to be. I'm certainly not an aesthetic. But it does always bring to mind when you and I live our life daily as God's people. The question is always, how are we doing that?
Well, but in the sense that the Lutherans seem to have a better view on vocation than the average person.
Sure.
Even out in Hawaii, you are still living out your vocation as someone who is participating in commerce. I mean, mm-hmm. when Luther talks about in the Lord's Prayer, how you get a loaf of bread on your table,
mm-hmm.
and how all this world interconnects.
Right.
Well, there was an airplane pilot that got paid because somebody was sitting in the seat, and
mm-hmm. absolutely,
the baggage handlers and the guy from and all that kind of stuff, and it all connects one to the other.
Right.
We cannot see. That's the thing about being in Christ. You cannot help but live out your sanctification.
Right. But the other piece of that too is that when you look at stewardship, it's not just what goes in the offering plate. It's your whole life. And that would always be my point with folks like that. If you're serious about stewardship, then it's everything that you do and say. All of your relationships with people somehow are formed and shaped by your or my relationship with Christ, which is one of freedom and forgiveness and the opportunity to serve others in a variety of different ways, which includes our participation in commerce and other things.
And as you pointed out a moment ago, even serving those who are not the same.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if, I asked you a little bit about what New Jersey was like. How's the Muslim population where you are?
Muslim population where I am is not particularly strong. I mean, there obviously are Muslims around us. But if I think if I had to identify a religious minority in Monmouth and Middlesex County, which is just north of us, it would have to be Asian Indians.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I remember last week, I don't remember the exact location, but there was an imam, a fairly, I guess, press-noted imam, who came out last week with the statement that, we're not a violent people as Muslims, but if you insult the prophet, you better look out for trouble. And he was calling for Homeland Security to clamp down on anyone that would have anything to say about Islam,
mm-hmm.
or disrespect of Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
I think his name was Gahani or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's something that that's an interesting question because not everybody is comfortable in the world with our notions of free speech.
Yeah,
I mean we consider that as Americans an absolute value. That folks have this free speech, and it is, this whole idea of the government is not supposed to get involved in those things, even though a lot of the things that people say are reprehensible. But, we've always had that notion that you have a right to say them and that. And so, we've paid the price for as Christians, we've had to live with free speech issues as well. The Mapplethorpe art exhibit and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Where people have, within the Christian community, have decried that and said they shouldn't be able to do that. Well, the answer to that is probably yes, they can do that. We may not approve of it. We certainly don't have to buy a ticket and go look at it. But, that particular knife cuts both ways, so.
Well, I bring this story up then with some concern that, who knows, if I bring this up on the air, maybe Homeland Security will spirit me away before the program's over. Who knows?
Who knows?
Boldly we go forward here. I don't know if you're much of a history buff or not, but today's a very important day that we tend to forget about in the Christian church, and that is back in October of 1732 on this day, the Battle of Tours took place.
Right.
And I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at what the Battle of Tours was all about.
I pulled that up.
Yeah, Charles Martel, mm-hmm. known as Charles the Hammer,
mm-hmm.
and not because he was a carpenter. Mm-hmm. He was the king of the Frankish kingdom at that time, and the Muslims had encroached all the way up into Europe. They were in the Iberian Peninsula in Spain, and they were working their way into northern France, and at this time it looked as if they might very well, you know, pretty much work their way across Europe and expand the caliphate across that. And the battle that takes place is Charles at the head of what would, I think, fairly be called a Christian army,
mm-hmm.
who came up against the Muslims, and they defeated them. And this defeat of the this Saracen and Muslim and Mohammedan army is what preserved Christianity for all of Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I mean, I'm just reading that and looking at that, and that's true, and it vaguely comes back to me. I remember some of that stuff from when I took history. And then if you remember during the Reformation time, again, it was the Turks were at the gates of Vienna. So, again, there's been several times in 1492, the Battle of, the Treaties of Andalusia and so forth, that removed the North African influences from Spain. I mean, this is something that has been going on for years and years and years. And as I read some and listen some and what people are saying, there are still those within that community who hold to the idea that there should be a caliphate all the way across the world. So, I mean, I think that's a motivation for some, I would think.
Well, here you have Charles Martel, who is the father of Charlemagne,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
Yep.
And then Charlemagne, the first Holy Roman Emperor, I guess, of the European context,
right.
And as opposed to one of the Byzantines.
Mm-hmm.
The spread of Christianity across Europe. And now, you bring up in the 16th century with the Turk at the door of Vienna,
mm-hmm.
the gate of Vienna. Now they're just inviting them in. I don't know if you saw the report, but Angela Merkel, who's the Chancellor of Germany, just within the last 2 weeks, had said that Islam is a permanent part of Germany now.
Mm-hmm.
And the President of Germany also, which is more of an honorific position than the President of the United States, has essentially said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you combine that with a report that came out that one of the least Christian places in all of Europe is Eastern Germany,
mm-hmm.
where the Reformation took hold.
Sure.
What in the world is going on?
Well, the short answer is, I think that the European populations are declining, just numerically, and the Eastern populations are rising. So I think that you look at the birth rates in Germany and France and Italy and even in Russia and even in the United States, you're finding the diminishing populations, and as populations diminish, then this opens up borders for immigration. So the opportunity there is to begin to.
Well, whatever happened to the idea that when the idea that you could compare cultures, and then make the assessment that one was perhaps superior to the other, and is this ultimately the product of too much political correctness and tolerance?
Well, it's a product of two things. One, it's a product of power, and then it is a product of, in our time perhaps, of the political correctness. In earlier days, it was a product of power, and because of the close merger between church and state in Europe and sometimes even in the United States, where you have this kind of single sentence, that says that we're here, which gets pretty far away from Luther's understanding of the two kingdoms.
Well, tell you what, why don't you wrap your thought up when we get back from the break? Pastor Paul Huneke, our guest this morning, new guest to the program. You're doing quite well, sir. You're fitting in perfectly here. From Luther Memorial Lutheran Church in Tinton Falls. You were afraid. Don't worry about it. It's a warm, safe harbor that we have for your trip, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back after a few announcements.
Okay.
Stick around, guys. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And like Richard, you can try the email, KFUO at KFUO.org. Good morning. Welcome back. It's the Ask the Pastor program on Worldwide KFUO. We are the messenger of good news and a broadcast ministry at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Our guest this morning, a new guest for our program, is Pastor Paul Heneke from Luther Memorial Lutheran Church in Tinton Falls, New Jersey. And you ready to go back to the phones, Pastor?
Sure.
Or do you want to finish your thought first?
No, it's okay. I mean, I think, let's go to the phone.
All right. Herman, good morning.
Yes, let's ask Pastor Heneke there. You mentioned the decline of the numbers of the Protestant churches in the eastern New England area. Would you say that there's a contributing influence in the pervasive, a secularized type of Unitarianism that you look at like Harvard University, Yale, Princeton, that were founded to train men for the Christian ministry, and you hardly find any regular Christianity there in those religion departments anymore. And also reflecting on the secularism out of the tombs of publication that come out of New York City. Do you see this as a factor?
Yeah, it absolutely. There's a growing secularism in the culture and in the world. I mean, it's just part of it. I mean, you have schools, you have colleges, universities, you have a fairly aggressive voices. In a number of different places, which really say that mankind, human folks, we're responsible for ourselves. There's no outside forces or influences there, and that we're capable of achieving a just society and achieving wholeness in life and achieving mental health and all that kind of stuff without any divine intervention or anything. It is a secularism which eliminates God from the equation. They just don't believe that. And if you do find folks who see some kind of a spiritual factor, it is certainly one which is to be seen as privately held and not fit for public conversation. I see that's a big thing for me. As I've observed this thing, is that more and more pressure is being applied in various ways that says that religious values are to be held privately. It's okay for you to do it in your home. It's okay for you to do it in your private life, but it really has no place in the public discourse. So you just see evidence of that all along the way in different places.
Last week, Herman, and Pastor, you may have heard the story as well, there is a Christian fraternity on the campus of Yale. Now, remember, Yale's a spinoff from Harvard, I believe. 10 pastors got together in the early 1700s, pooled all of their books to form a college library, and then Yale resulted from that. I think I've got that history right. That they have a problem on the campus of Yale because this fraternity wants to be exclusive to people who declare faith in Christ. And Yale will not stand for such intolerance.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's another way of just whittling away constantly at the notion that religious life is of value in a broad society. That it would be of value in a personal life if that's what you choose to believe, but not in any public sort of a way.
Yes, on that thought, it's interesting to note that in some cases you've had court rulings that prohibit the teaching of intelligent design, mm-hmm. even though it may be propounded by people who are not necessarily Christians.
And, right.
Public schools, and in favor of teaching, as numerous textbooks do, that evolution is a proven fact, which mm-hmm. is not.
Right.
So you're teaching a religion. You're giving actually legal standing then to a state religion of evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're kind of in the bigger, kind of overarching thing there is that the growing rise of people who militantly believe that there is no God.
And they descended from a monkey infallibly.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's got its own stuff that goes with it. And but you kind of see that. I think one of the things that just the observation over this over the years, over like the 30 years I've been doing this kind of stuff, is that the removal of religious language and persons from the public square. And you know, that where you would have communities that, and this varies from community to community, but where you have communities that, you know, open their council meetings with prayer or, you know, do all those kinds of things.
Yeah, voluntary prayer like that is good. But what do you think, Herman and Pastor, of, well, this Pulpit Sunday thing that took place last week where 1,500 pastors defiantly in the face of the IRS stood up and proclaimed politics from their pulpit? Is this a good thing?
Who wants to go first?
Well, I'd say this. If you've got a good lawyer at your sleeve, go ahead and do it. There was a time when you could, prior to, I think, 1967, during the Lyndon Johnson administration or somewhere in there or thereabouts. That Lyndon Johnson brought that rule in.
Yeah, the Johnson Amendment, right.
And prior to that, it was not. Indeed, you'd better have a good lawyer by your sleeve.
Yeah, I think that was an act of civil disobedience, I guess, on the part of those pastors to test that law, that IRS ruling and law and so forth about that. I think, in a real sense, for me, I think it's the proclamation of faith. It's saying to people who are assembled on Sunday morning and in other places that they cannot separate their political life from their religious life, and that their values, as they live them out as God's people and for us as Lutherans, that is going to inevitably affect, you know, how we make our political decisions.
I would pick up a quote from the late Baptist pastor Adrian Rogers out of Memphis, Tennessee, who's still on the radio, and he was saying in his latter years that he wasn't so much concerned about people praying in the government, but do people pray in the church and pray in their family and personally. I think to a certain extent, you know, the public prayers at council meetings and things, there certainly is a Christian tradition in this country behind them, but it is principally the churches that have the stewardship in charge to proclaim and identify and educate in Christianity.
Sure, and I would say that if you're worshiping in a church that, like here, my parish, every Sunday we pray for those in authority by name. You know, I mean, it's the President of the United States, it's the Congress, it's all those folks, because this is a good thing, you know. What if Paul, you know, this idea of God would have us pray for these people, and pray that God leads in their life and works in their life sincerely. And, you know, this idea that you're saying, that we also do that for our local officials. We also pray for our own police and firemen and all those kinds of things. It's on a very regular, regimented sort of basis that we do this. That becomes, and then let them know that you're doing this for them, and so that's part of that public voice that we have. But you cannot separate your political life, your voting, your participation in the community from who you are as God's child. You are there as God's child because that's who you are. You can never take that uniform off. It's always part of you. Christ lives in you. And that becomes part of that stewardship of life. As you and I think about issues, as we think about the major things that go on around us, to be able to sort through all those things in a God-pleasing sort of way.
Well, thank you very much, Pastor.
Thank you, Herman. Good to hear from you this morning. Let's continue with our phone calls. We've got a full board for you, Pastor Henneke.
Really?
Let's
live.
Go to Hope next. Hope, good morning. You're up next with Pastor Henneke.
Yes, I'd just like to mention a little while back you talked about Germany with the Muslims. When we visited Germany last December, the church we attended, they had a confirmation, and it was a young woman accepting to become Lutheran Christian over there, and she was confirmed.
Yeah.
So God does still work in marvelous ways.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you're familiar, Hope, but another good friend, Dr. Uwe Simonetto, I think he's back in the country now. I got a call from him. Uwe, if you're listening, I'll call you back this afternoon, wrote an article for The Atlantic, which is one of his publications. He's an AP correspondent from way back. He runs the League of Faithful Masks out of San Juan Capistrano out in California.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote an article about in the land of Luther, in the Reformation country of Germany,
mm-hmm.
where so many Germans have forsaken the church,
mm-hmm.
Iranian expatriates, Muslims, are coming to faith and joining the Lutheran church. But they're joining the free church, which is making the state church, here we go back again to the state church, making them crazy because this is not politically correct to convert Muslims to Christianity.
But this was not a state church either.
Yeah.
Okay?
Now, one of the interesting things here in Jersey is and one of the things that I think we're thinking about and trying our best to deal with is the fact that New Jersey does have huge numbers of immigrants in it. And I know Dr. Steinbrenn has had a lot to do with, trying to establish these immigrant churches in our cities, Newark, Jersey City. We have two of them. One, one's Liberian. The other one is Kenyan.
Yeah.
In Basking Ridge, Jim Buckman's got working with Spanish speaking folks over there. We got a delayed vicar working in two house churches over there, and so many of us are seriously thinking about how do we do ministry to people who are coming to us from foreign lands who are not Christians and who are coming here and are that the immigration challenge there is that we can introduce them to Christ. So I think that's the other side of that coin. As we look at the changing population, it also becomes an opportunity to witness.
Absolutely.
It also becomes an opportunity to share the gospel. We got a school in Fords. I think it's about Fords, New Jersey, which is just up the road. It's a great little school. And I think they're about 50% Hindu.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And because of that Middlesex County population. These are folks who are interested in education. They're interested in that. And out of that, I think last year they had two baptisms and a couple of families joined the church and all that kind of stuff.
Well, so thanks be to God for that. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it's how you look at this stuff, and the way I think they're choosing to look at it is as an opportunity where Christ has put them in touch with people that they perhaps wouldn't have been in touch with had they not had the school, had they not been open to this. They do that in a wonderful way. I mean, it's really true. We've had Hindu-Asian kids here as well. We've had some Muslim kids here in our school. And they participate in the chapel. They hear the stories. They sing the songs. Who knows what seeds are planted there that will bear fruit later on in life.
Let's go back to the phones. David, thanks for your patience. You're on, Pastor.
Thank you. That's not really one of my virtues, but I'm working on it.
Well, you're doing fine this morning. Go with it.
2 points I just want to make, and I'll hang up, and I'll listen to what the pastor has to say. Why are we so worried about this tax-exempt status? When you read the New Testament, the apostles didn't seem to care what the government or Sanhedrin told them. Number two is about, well, I hear a lot of people say I've been called to be a pastor. What I want to know is, what is it, a feeling, or you don't hear a voice? Because I've heard the same thing from women who say I've been called into the ministry. So either what they're hearing is not the Holy Spirit or what they're making something in their own head. Those are the two questions I have, and I'll just listen on the radio if I could.
All right, David, thank you for the call this morning. Pastor?
Well, what do you want to do first?
Your choice.
Oh,
you're the guest. I'm here to follow.
Okay. Yeah, I think the tax thing is interesting to me, simply because this comes from a generation, a time when folks said collectively, the community said that having religious institutions among us and in our communities is significant enough that we're going to give them tax-exempt status. I mean, I think that's the origin of that. And I think one of the problems that the church has done to itself is that many times we have not been that value added in community. I know nobody wants to hear that, but sometimes we have not been a value added in the community. And folks who are looking at that are saying, you know, why should you get a break when you're not supportive of what's going on in this community? You know, so that's just a piece of that. I think we probably will lose that at some point in time unless things significantly change.
Well, it just does if the freedom comes along with that.
Yeah, sure.
That you no longer are bound by what you can and cannot say.
Oh, absolutely. No. I mean, so that anytime you enjoy a privilege, you know, then there's always a price for that privilege. And even though in the United States it's a kind of a small one in the sense of tax exempt rather than a check that comes all the time, in Europe it's that government then gets to tell you a lot of stuff about what you do and how you do it and where you do it and all those kinds of things. So it's something which evolved in our country and in our communities, and a lot of tax collectors are looking at that. Local tax collectors. We just got done in New Jersey with one in south of me, in which they decided to attempted to tax the church. They lost it. There's plenty of case law that says no. But one of the things you really need to demonstrate in that is that what you're doing is actually religious rather than just kind of some kind of secular thing that goes on, you know.
Yeah, when you can mail order
to raise money, you know.
Yeah, when you can mail order a theology degree, that's they do have to be. I mean, there is a legitimate side to what they do in being on guard for that.
Absolutely.
Now, the second half of the question.
What
does it mean to be called?
Call. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've always wondered about that myself. And I would say that I am called to ministry. I mean, I really believe that. And it was a way my life unfolded. It was that kind of doors opened up, and opportunities proclaimed themselves or presented themselves, and I was able to follow them, and I ended up where I am now. I think there's two sides to this call thing. One is the idea that you say you have a call, and you say God wants you to do this. I think the other side of that, which is equally important, is God's people saying, "Yeah, we agree with you, and you are we will acknowledge your ministry." And I think that's woven into our system, you know, pretty nicely, because in that in an installation service or an ordination service, you have both sides of that present. You have the idea that here is a candidate. And then he answers all of his questions, and then a congregation or entity which says, "We agree, we will accept you." So that kind of speaks to the question that or the comment that was made by the caller, that you know, how do you know that? And I think one of the ways you know that and has affirmed that is that the church publicly proclaims and accepts and acknowledges your inner call.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest this morning is Pastor Paul Heneke from Luther Memorial Lutheran Church in Tinton Falls, New Jersey. Don't know if, I mean, everywhere, pretty much everywhere, the abortion issue in this political year. Well, I don't know. There's so much going on right now. Do you think the abortion issue is a big deal for this election?
Well, it depends on the day of the week. Again, you go back to individual people who will make decisions based on their values, and right to life for us biblical confessing Lutheran people is certainly central. I mean, it's not something that we can compromise on. It's not something that we can nuance. This is wrong. So you have to stand up for that. And one of the interesting things that I always find interesting, at least, is that in the early church, one of the things that enabled the church to grow was its it was its acceptance of the weak and the poor and slave and the abandoned kids. You know, when you read those stories, you know them as well as I do.
That this
serious taking note of those who have needs and could find refuge and help and comfort and love and Christ, in the name of Christ, within the church. So this is not something we can kind of walk away from, or something we can nuance or get away from. Now, whether that's going to be a big issue in a national debate kind of thing, I don't know. I think there will be folks who will try to make it that, and I think you see that sometimes. You know, if you watch the conventions and stuff, you know, you got this idea that it was pretty prominently featured, you know. But whether that takes root, I don't know. It seems to me that as I read the survey stuff and look at that, the way it's playing out, is more and more people are coming to a position that says abortion's probably not a good thing. We don't want to do that.
Yeah, the reason I raise it is there's some noise in the press this morning about some things that Mitt Romney had said. Now, you may be familiar, you may not, but before we get into the Book of Acts on the Bible study, we spent a couple of weeks in some of the minor prophets. And the thing I always marvel at is that here you have Israel. Israel has God, and yet they still run outside of their borders to try and find political solutions to their problems. That's one of the reasons, I guess, why they were so upset with Jonah going to Nineveh, because if Nineveh survives, well, here's another big political power that would threaten them at some point in the future.
Sure, absolutely.
And it seems like a lot of the pro-life movement has been so focused on the politics of the issue. And I really wonder where it gets them, because, you know, here Mitt Romney, at one time pro-choice, then pro-life, and now he's in the press as saying that legislation about abortion will not be a primary part of his agenda should he be elected. And it also calls to mind that, we've spent so much of our time and treasure on who gets elected for the sake of judges, and then look what happened with the health care ruling that came down. Fine Christian gentleman, Chief Justice John Roberts, good Roman Catholic fellow, said that, you know, all those abortion provisions and everything else were going to be upheld as good law for the land. And I'm wondering if we're perhaps just putting our focus in the wrong place on this issue.
Well, put not your trust in princes. I mean, that's, you know, if you remember that Psalm verse, you know. That's, again, where we look to the state. You know, I mean, it goes into that church-state thing. You cannot look to the state to enforce your values initially. I mean, if that's what we're relying on, then that's pretty fluid. But again, it comes back to the idea of helping people understand what it means to be Christ-like, and how Christ works in their life through the Word, through the sacraments, through preaching and teaching and conversation, to begin to form and shape a different value structure.
Yeah.
And eventually that value structure lives itself out. I mean, it's in all of these issues, whether it's right to life or whether it's euthanasia, what you're interested in is not legislation, but diminished numbers of abortions. What you're interested in is people choosing to live, because we could always end up in a society, you know, in which euthanasia is okay. We're going to do that.
Yeah, it does seem to be our cultural solution to everything these days is kill it.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's make it go away.
Yeah.
And I think that that has to do with the larger question of suffering and does suffering have purpose in a postmodern world in which we live? People are saying the quick, you know, whatever is painful, get rid of it right away.
Let's take one more very quick call here. We've got let's see if they've got. There we go. All right, Chet, we've got about 30 seconds. Be real quick for me.
Oh, yes. Pastor, you missed an element of the earlier caller's question about men called to pastors. He specifically mentioned women. If men say a call such as you say in your life, then how can we dispute women who say they are called to that position within the church?
All right.
Well,
Chet, now you're going to get 30 seconds.
Yeah, they can say it, and then the question is, is that affirmed? And we have said, and the Roman Catholic Church has said, and we have said, and the Orthodox Church have said, which represents a huge number of a part of the church, have said, no, we're not going to affirm that for you. So then they have to go find, you know, different places and folks and communities where it will be affirmed. But most of Christendom has said no.
Pastor Paul Heineke has been our guest this month. You went everywhere. We did a little politics, a little women's ordination. We did Ananias and Sapphira. You see, this was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was good.
Well, thanks for your time. Hey, I hope come be our guest again, will you please?
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime. I mean,
All right. Thank you, my friend. We've got to run.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor. All right, guys. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless. Bye-bye.
Listen to the Bible Study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.